Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everybody. I'm Albie, and welcome to Seen Anything
Good Lately. I'm Zach.
Hello, Zach. This is a podcast that we are doing about television shows and the movies, maybe at some point down the line.
Sure, we're doing a podcast about things that we watch, whether it is on a television, an iPad, a Nokia Engage, PSP Vita, wherever you can watch media. Yeah, a Zune, wherever you can watch and ingest media, we're gonna talk about it.
We're gonna talk about all the shows that you care about. That's not true at all, because most of the time we probably like shows that you don't, but we're gonna try to explore some TV shows. We're gonna explore the new world of screen-based entertainment.
Yes, that's what we're doing. That's what we're aiming for, and we want to open up a world of shows to you that maybe you didn't think about or maybe heard of in passing and went like, oh, and then hear other people talk about it and go like, oh, maybe I should watch that.
Yeah. So this used to be, I'll give a little history, a podcast we did like 4 episodes of and then ended. But the branding, after I told Zach of the branding of this great show, we had to bring it back, you know? The name is too good not to make a Twitter account and tweet hot memes with. That's all I know.
It is. And as your branding manager and executive producer, I feel like we can do a lot with the name.
Yeah. It can go on shirts. It can go on hats.
Wristbands, perhaps. I don't know.
Lanyards. Everybody loves a lanyard.
Who doesn't love a lanyard?
Everybody does. So yeah, just to give you a brief overview of what we're trying to do here, we're going to be looking at television shows primarily for the time being. We may expand it and probably will into kind of deeper dives kind of things into television shows, but also we're going to look at some channel retrospectives. We're gonna do some, you know, look backs, look forwards kind of stuff. Some conversations about various aspects of the industry. Certainly news if it pops up. But for this one, our blanket kind of starting, kind of basic, kind of generic brand of Seen Anything Good Lately with the local shopping goods thing on it.
Yeah, it's the great value of podcasts. Put that as the motto.
This is the great value form of Seen Anything Good Lately. We are going to just, you know, ask the simple question. Hey, Zach, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I've seen a show that everybody has been talking about in one way or another, because it's been making waves on the internet since it came out mid-July of this year, our Lord, 2018. And it goes by the name of Who is America? And, listen.
Why are you sighing about Who is America?
I've got mixed feelings on Who is America. As somebody who loves Sacha Baron Cohen, who has done many characters over the... many funny characters, very successful, long-running characters, such as Ollie G when he was on HBO, Borat, that everybody quoted at one point or another for at least 6 months. In high school, I am 27, so that was prime Borat time in high school to make all of these my wife jokes. And I just, yes. I, after a while, it just sort of soured me on the whole thing. But
sure.
I caught up with it years down the line and was like, okay, this is all right. And also of Bruno fame, I believe he also incited an actual riot at the end of Bruno, a literal riot, because he kissed a man in Texas in a cage, and Texans were not a big fan of that, as you may be able to discern. Who is America is weird to me. It's not
so it's a political satire show. It's like,
yes. So okay. The basis of this whole thing is Sacha Baron Cohen has come back after bombing in a 2016 movie called Grimsby, which wasn't very good.
Oh, good. Okay, sure.
That's a little mean of me to say, but it wasn't well received in the States. It could have been better outside of here, but from what I've seen, not great here in the good old U.S. of A. So he did that, and he hasn't really been doing much outside of that, and that was 2016. So he kind of went off the grid, and I don't know the time frame of when he did all of these things, but essentially, this is a 7-episode series that was on Showtime, and it kind of just dropped out of nowhere. It was one of those things that got some people talking about it on Twitter maybe a couple weeks before, where they're like, oh, Sacha Baron Cohen's back, and he's doing this whole America thing where he's dressing up as different characters and running with it. Now, I have, again, mixed feelings on this. So essentially what you need to know is Sacha Baron Cohen is a man of a lot of comedy talent. He dresses up and plays characters to a T very well. They're ridiculous characters. Ollie G was a white rapper, like a British like rapper sort of guy, and he wasn't very good. Bruno was a homosexual sort of like fashion guy. Borat was this like crude foreigner. And I'm not doing a service to Sacha Baron Cohen's work by saying that. These are all good characters. They're just, you know, they hit on things that are stereotypes, because that's what you do in comedy sometimes to get the most funny out of something.
I just wanted to ask, does he ever appear out of character? I don't seem to remember many interviews with him not as one of the aforementioned characters.
If you look hard enough, he has been on a couple of radio shows as himself talking about these things. I do believe that he was on Howard Stern at one point years ago as himself talking about all of this stuff, which is actually a good interview. I like Howard Stern, personally. I understand why people might not, but say what you will about the man, does a great interview. And he interviewed Sacha Baron Cohen quite a bit, just as Sacha Baron Cohen. And he was also, I believe, on Mark Maron's podcast, WTF Podcast. And he's done it seems like few and far between, just as the man himself. But yes, they are out there. So in this show, basically, he's got 5 or 6 different characters that he goes to. One of them is a far right conspiracy theorist who sits down with a couple of political people and tries to convince them that whatever they believe in isn't true. And these are people that share his same beliefs, by the way. It's not like he's going to the ultra left and going like, see, this is fake. Like, he's doing it to the alt-right people. And there is one of his other characters is a white NPR sort of self-hating white guy who rides his bike everywhere because he wants to save the planet. You can see where it's kind of going with all like stereotypes of ultra left, ultra right. The one that got the most play, I think, was his Israeli anti-terrorism expert by the name of Aaron Murad, who claims to be a member of the Israeli military. And he gets so in one of these episodes, there's a Republican state representative by the name of Jason Spencer. Jason Spencer is from Georgia, and he goes into this training with Sacha Baron Cohen's character. And basically what this character of Sacha Baron Cohen does is prey on all of your fears, and he gets mostly, again, political, since this is a political show. He gets people who are mostly on the conservative, if not alt-right side, who dislike, like different ethnicities, minorities, and basically preying on their fear of Muslims, at least in this specific instance. It was Jason Spencer who was obviously not a fan of anybody that didn't look like him, and I'll just leave it at that. So he did some training with him in like this gym, and he basically tells Mr. Spencer a series of things on how to defend himself from Muslims. And it goes from something it starts out with the stakes a little higher than it ought to be, but it starts out with him basically convincing Jason Spencer to put a selfie stick under somebody's burqa to see if they are a woman.
We take a selfie stick and we take a photo underneath. It is the same that you do with the car. Mm-hmm. These are photos that I took.
Already starting out sort of gross, and it doesn't get any better from there. The second thing he trains Jason Spencer to do is to walk backwards while showing his bare butt?
ISIS are scared of being seen as homo. You know what it means, homo?
Yeah, yeah.
If your buttock touch them, it means they have become a...
homosexual.
Now I am going to teach you how to use your buttocks to intimidate ISIS. Show me the buttock. No, trousers down. Okay, go.
America!
Good, one more time, but louder with America.
America!
Good.
And yelling racial epithets at people. So he basically tricks people into doing crazy things to own the Muslims, or like the meme on the internet, to own the libs, so to speak. It sounded like you had a question. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
How does he convince these people to do these things? That's my, I just don't understand. I mean, you could convince to have a conversation with somebody, but to go through all of this, it seems excessive, and like, just don't understand how he convinces somebody to go that far.
Well, it's kind of crazy because it just sort of preys on these people who don't like, in this particular instance, Muslims. And he basically says, like, well, if you pretend your family is being attacked, Sacha Baron Cohen's character, and he gets them to just say these things. And I believe after the show, or after this episode aired, the guy was like, you know, I did it because I wanted... It was some horrible explanation and some justification about why he said these things. He's yelling the N-word on TV. Like, what? How are you going to justify any of this? So essentially, that's a glimpse into it. There's some other stuff here. There was one bit that I want to mention because it was written by Nathan Fielder of Nathan For You fame on Comedy Central, which is a very great show. And it was... It was the NPR character going to a, and this is actually funny and very sad at the same time if you watch this clip. He went to Kingman, Arizona as the NPR ultra-lefty character. And basically he had to present a PowerPoint to about 20 or 30 people who were sitting in this room with him. And the PowerPoint starts out kind of innocuous, and it's just sort of like, okay, we want to bring some revenue and some money into your small town of Kingman, Arizona, which I didn't look up, but it's fairly small from what I know. And he starts doing this PowerPoint and he says, all right, here we go. And the buildup is basically he reveals that they're going to build a mosque in Kingman, Arizona. And these people went from being very receptive to it to outright calling him the worst names possible and admitting that they were all racist. And one of the people there even just said outright without any prompting, yeah, black people are really lucky to live in this town.
You're not here.
A more diverse. Thank you, sir. Don't be ashamed.
He's saying there's black people in Kingman that aren't welcome there either, but we tolerate them.
It gets into some pretty bad territory.
Heady territory, sure.
I'm not going to sit here and say this is my favorite show of the year. It is not. I like what it's going for. I like Sacha Baron Cohen because I think he's got a great comedic mind.
Sure.
And I think, if anything, this thing is a train wreck to watch at points, but it is sort of necessary to watch because you look at some of this stuff, especially this Kingman, Arizona thing, where people were willing to hear him out, and then suddenly they just went, as soon as he mentioned anybody, like he mentioned Hillary Clinton at one point, and everybody just got so angry, and then everybody started getting racist and misogynistic. And it really opens your eyes to what is actually going on in the country, which is the central theme of the show. I read a lot of things saying that, well, the show isn't funny. And the point of this show is to kind of, it is funny in spots. I happen to think it's very funny in spots. But the point of the show was to try and get people on blast for like, hey, this stuff is happening right here in America. And these people will do anything to defend their point of view. And it's crazy, dog. Like, it is crazy to see people willingly go along with essentially putting their mouth on somebody else's, you know, phallus like he did in one episode. And, like, he just gets these people to do insane things that any logical person would not do. And it's crazy to me. It's an uncomfortable show. It's funny. Again, wouldn't say it's probably in my top 10 if I had to make a list right now. But I do think that it is worth watching because there is some points in this thing where you just go like, man, as an American, you just sort of, you shake your head and go like, I can't believe that this is, like, there are people like this that exist. And it's just shining a light on that. And sometimes it happens to be funny, and other times it happens to just be hugely uncomfortable.
You know, as somebody who's never been a fan, I think, of Sacha Baron Cohen's work, I think it's one of those shows that every time I watch a clip of it, I'm just surprised at how far people will go. And maybe that's a commentary on the way in which our culture is so politicized now, that people want, to whatever extent, to be, I don't know, to express a view, or to, I don't know, to be political to a certain extent. Like, it's I think it's a startling a look at the kind of divisions we're having in the United States right now.
It's a train wreck at some points. Yeah, it is. And I think it's worth watching because it's not necessarily funny, but it is funny in points where it shouldn't be funny. And it's also just, you're watching through your hands because you're like, I can't believe somebody did this in the sake of defending their opinion and marginalizing these groups of people. Like, it's just, it's insane. It really is. I think it serves as a good case study down the line. 100 years from now, when somebody watches this back, this time back, and they go like, this is what was happening in 2018. You're like, wow, okay. I think it could serve as something like that going down the line.
Do you feel like it particularly leans towards, like, a left? Like, is it you had mentioned briefly the kind of NPR guy. Like, does it try to balance itself between having, like, extreme far right represented kind of that negative way, and then left also? Like, what do you?
It feels 80-20. It feels more everything goes to the alt-right, except there are a couple of times where they interviewed Bernie Sanders for a thing where the right-wing character of Billy Wayne Ruddock Jr., who is the alt-right conspiracy theorist guy, sat down with Bernie Sanders, and it's literally a minute long, and it's basically he tries to propose in character this asinine plan for, like, redistributing wealth, and Bernie politely says, like, no, that's stupid.
Make the rest of America and put them into the 1%.
Well, if you put everybody into the 1%, they wouldn't be the 1%.
No, it still would be.
Really, I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't.
And then it just ends, which I think says more about, like, where we are as a society with both of these sides, where it's like one side wants to do everything to defend their position, whether they are completely wrong about it, and then the other side goes like, well, that's kind of dumb. Why would you, like, no. It doesn't shy away from putting the alt-right and the conservative values on blast. The 2018 conservative values on blast, I should say. Like,
okay.
It doesn't balance itself out particularly well, so it's going to alienate a lot of people probably. But I do think it does serve as in the annals of history, when you look back, you're going to go like, all right, this thing that happened in 2018, holy shit, this happened in 2018? Yeah, it did, in America. Albie, have you seen anything good lately?
Well, with keeping with this whole political tint we're on here, I would like to talk to you about Jack Ryan. Tom Clancy's okay. Jack Ryan.
I know Tom. I know some Clance. I know some Tom Clance. This has that gym guy from The Office in it. It is John Krasinski.
Krasinski, yes, John Krasinski is in this show. This is a show created and produced by Amazon Video, the Amazon for Amazon Prime primarily. They've been pushing this thing for the last few, probably a few months now, kind of building it up and building it up and building it up. So Jack Ryan, if you don't know, focuses around the CIA agent, CIA analyst, Jack Ryan, who's kind of a type A kind of guy. He does a lot of research into finances. He's kind of somebody that looks at the numbers, but then also has some background being a former Marine. Who was injured at a certain point as Marine. So, yeah, he's kind of got both the kind of CIA analyst stuff and also a more hardcore, Marine background to him as a character. The show itself kind of develops into, like, this very political, very kind of Zero Dark 30 sort of show focused primarily around a terrorist called Suleiman. Al Suleiman, who is committing acts of terrorism. He's like this kind of new brand of terrorist, raised in the West, you know, kind of educated in the West, grew up in the West a lot of the time, lost his parents when he was very young, and kind of has a very, very hard, you know, hard edge to him because of how the Western culture reacted to him. He was living in Paris at the time, couldn't get a job in his chosen field because he was, to a certain extent, you know, a Muslim individual and a darker-skinned individual. So yeah, it was it's a show that, you know, plays with some of the things you were just mentioning, but in a very, you know, in kind of a political thrillery kind of way. I think the median comparison I had to it was very much 24, which aired in the early 2000s. It kind of does a lot of those similar things. You know, you have a bad guy, you have a good guy, and the good guy is trying to find out what a bad guy is. You know, it's kind of that same core thing to it. Unfortunately, and this is going to come as a surprise, this is not a show I particularly enjoyed too much. There are moments where, I don't know what you would call it. There's moments where, so in episode 2, spoiler warning, I believe it's episode 2, episode 3, it's one of those, they introduce a character of a American drone pilot who is kind of troubled by having done a drone strike on a target of a dad they had been observing for several days. They I guess got the call and said, you know, take this guy out, your drone, shoot him with a rocket, blow him up. Obviously, they had been observing him for several days, seen his kind of interactions with his family, and been very, you know, you get close to people after watching them for a while. So this guy was certainly messed up. And in episode 2, he goes out, they get money from, when they get a good kill, they give each other money, the different drone pilots. There's two in the show. They hand each other, you know, $100 bills or whatever. They give each other money for successful strikes on targets. And then he takes that money in episode 2 and goes out gambling and meets this couple. One of them, I believe, is played by Cynthia Preston.
As of this recording, football came back the first week, and I saw some Jack Ryan stuff on the Red Zone that I was watching, and I don't know a lot about... Is John Krasinski okay in this as a serious guy? Is this a good role for Mr. Krasinski, the guy that everyone goes, hey, that's Jim from The Office?
He does an adequate job of portraying, I think, the best out of... So if you don't know, Jack Ryan is a character that's been around a long time. He's a character that Clancy has written about extensively. There have been movies about him, I believe. Harrison Ford played him in a movie at some point. There was the recent one starring Chris Pine was in it. Jack Ryan is a character who is in The Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, To Some of All Fears. He's been around, let's just say that, as a character. To get back to my original point, and we'll edit that. I want to move that around a little bit. But so the person I was talking about was Lee Targinskin. Lee Targinski. He was in the HBO show Oz. He was Evan Wright in Generation Kill. He's been in a bunch of stuff. So they kind of hang out with him at this casino where he is gambling this money. He wins big. He wins really big. And then this couple take this other guy home. This drone pilot. And it's bizarre scene of debauchery, but then the male part of the couple beats the drone pilot for a while and then leaves. And it's, I still to this day don't understand what that scene added. And it was that moment where the show sort of lost me, because it spent so much time on that scene, on building up this, you know, drone pilot. Like, there are a lot of good scenes with this drone pilot in this show, but it just felt like there are certain moments in this show that you could have done without, that added added nothing of real value, of real substance to the show. And it's just, it's a shame because it's very close to really good.
How far did you get into this before you sort of just went like, I don't know?
I have finished Jack Ryan.
Is this one of those shows that starts out quick or is it a slow burn where you have to get in?
It is very slow. It's the thing I don't like about it. And I had mentioned 24 before. I think it ends up being more like Zero Dark 30 and very much less like 24. I feel like a 24 show is what I wanted. A little bit more action, a little bit more... A little bit less, you know, dialogue, a little bit less slow pacing. Like, I wanted I wanted to see just some running and gunning almost. But it ends up being much more of a talking show, a much more of an emotional bent kind of show. And that can kind of work. It's one of those shows, it's briefly short. It's only 8 episodes, so you can get through it if you want to watch it. But it's one of those shows that I think... will get better with a second season. It established these characters now. It's established a world in which we are telling stories. Now it can go out there and do some very, very interesting things. But at the same time, I don't know if I'm on board for that. It might be a better show season 2, but I don't know if I want to see that show.
That's weird. Yeah, that happens to some shows, though, right? Like, it takes a season for a show to kind of find its legs, I think. And you're doing it a disservice if maybe you watch a show for one season and you go like, I don't know about that. You can see that there is some good stuff there, and then you don't come back for the second season. I think that's doing it a disservice because it sounds like it just has to set some stuff up, even if it is slow. Like there's another show that I've seen where earlier this year that started out like slow within the 3 episodes, and I was almost out on it, and then I stuck around because I was like, okay, yeah, I think this is going to be okay, and it turns out it was. So it sounds like maybe the first episode of the second season is going to be a make or break moment where you're like, all right, does this thing have its stuff in order to where I want to be around for the final resolution when we get, you know, 7 episodes deep into this thing?
I mean, there's a lot of great action sequences in this. I don't want to make it seem like it's incredibly slow and boring. There are great moments of real action, of real suspense. But there are just so many moments of... either you have, like, awkward scenes, you know, some of the side characters are good, not all of them. I don't believe some of them as their characters. I think A.B. Cornish is not very good in the show. I think she comes off a little flat. She doesn't really, you know, she's not really a character. I was like, oh, yeah, I care about that character. I think the main bad guy is okay. He's kind of stereotypically... plays the stereotypical bad guy pretty well. Wendell Price is someone else who I think does a pretty admirable job as the actor as the character he plays, which is, you know, the kind of senior level CIA leader of the department. But at the same time, none of them blew me away. I think the best actor in the show is John Krasinski. Say it again, John Krasinski. Krasinski. John Krasinski, I think, is definitely the best actor in that show. But at the same time, there was just too many holes. There were too many moments where you go like, man, I wonder if that could have used more time in the oven. Another run at the script. Another run at a scene. It was one of those things where, you know, if they're able to patch those holes, and I think overall they probably will be able to do that. But it just doesn't, like, I'm not going to suffer through 8 more episodes of this to go like, okay, well, now it's a good show. Like, I just don't have that time, you know?
Sure. I don't blame you. I mean, it's different, but as I said with Who Is America, I feel like there is a lot of things here. Like, it sounds like we're both kind of tepid on our shows, but it's also like, I don't know, I watched it and I didn't dislike it. There was just like, I don't know that I could recommend this to somebody else, is the thing.
And I don't think you necessarily need to, you know, like, it just left me with such a feeling of, like, there are so many great, there's never been a better time to be watching television shows. There are so many great options that, for me, a political thing that's sort of okay, that sort of hits the notes. This doesn't, you know, I'd rather go back and watch 24, which I think the first few seasons of 24 right now are, I think, still speak to people in that way, where I feel like you could take this show, give it to somebody in 20 years and then go, yeah, that's okay. Like, they're not gonna have that same resonance with it that I feel like other shows that have done some of the things do. So that's my review of Jack Ryan. I think it's a good show, but at the same time, perhaps not for me.
It's interesting. Yeah, it is. I mean, didn't John Krasinski pretty much play this character in that 13 Hours movie like 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Like, pretty much.
I mean, is John Krasinski getting pigeonholed into just like handsome CIA agent? I feel like that's where he's going with his career, which is fine. Get your money.
I feel like it. Yeah, get your money, man.
A Quiet Place was a very good movie that he, I think, helped co-write and direct. So, I mean, that did pretty well for him. But as far as acting goes, I feel like he's just getting pigeonholed into handsome CIA agent, which, hey, man, go for it.
And I feel like I want to say again, this, you know, people, the reaction, I know a certain subset of people will love this show. But for me, it was like, it's good, I guess, but just not enough for me. Not enough on the bone to really be a great show. This has seen anything good lately. You just have to meet the good criteria.
The good, yeah. The good is not a high, high bar. I mean, it is a bar, but not that high.
Have you seen anything else good lately? And see, I added the anything else in there, and it was important.
Anything else lately? I have, and it's going to be a little out there, I think, especially for you, because you're not a huge comedy guy, so... This is less for you and for anybody else that might be into the idea of comedy, specifically stand-up comedy, but it's a twist on stand-up comedy that I find fascinating, that I'm not sure out of the box works quite yet, but I do like where it's going. So there was a Drew Michael is an SNL writer. He did a stand-up special on HBO. It's roughly 52-ish minutes. And with stand-up comedy, you have the conventions of a stage, a microphone, and a large crowd, or even a smaller crowd if it's a smaller venue. This stand-up special is directed by Gerard Carmichael, who had his own HBO special not a year ago, I believe, something around there. That was a conventional stand-up special where he was doing it on a stage, on a circular stage, so it was, you know, 360, I get those confused sometimes. So it's all the way around, basically, is what I'm saying. He was standing in the middle of an audience, and he could see everybody if he so chose, just like a conventional stand-up comedy special would be. It was an hour long. He did jokes. Drew Michael is doing jokes, and this thing is directed by, like I said, Gerard Carmichael, who has a really good eye for this stuff, because he is very funny, and I like the way that some of the cinematography in this stuff works. Drew Michael is on a sound stage, and he is essentially doing comedy without an audience. He is in front of essentially what is a big you know, the equivalent of a big green screen, essentially, but a professional sound stage. So think of a sound stage with professional lighting and all of that. And he's essentially looking straight into a camera as if you were watching a YouTube vlog of sorts, somebody at their desk or something like that. Think of that. He's looking straight into a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Michael is telling jokes and doing jokes in an unconventional way, where you're not getting a laugh. There is no laughing to be had. There is no track of laughter. It is him presenting his ideas of jokes directly into a camera with different, not just one camera, but there is a straight ahead shot of him. There is also some off to the side, some different angles of maybe a close up on his face at one point, or an extreme wide shot where he is just sort of walking around and pacing on the soundstage while giving you a thought that usually has a good punchline at the end. It is super weird. As somebody who loves stand-up comedy, I've watched hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of stand-up comedy, from Richard Pryor to Robin Williams to Chris Rock to anybody you can think of. I probably watched their stand-up special.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a weird idea to me, but I love it. I love what they're trying to do here. What Drew Michael is trying to do here is so hard to pull off. and so crazy that I can't help but respect it, even though it didn't quite hit what I wanted it to for me. He's delivering a monologue of sorts that have, it's usually talking, I believe he's got some sort of hearing deficiency. He's not deaf or anything, but he talks about how he can't hear at certain points. He talks about his relationship issues. And again, you're not, when you're conditioned to watching stand-up comedy, you're conditioned to have the laughter in between these jokes.
Sure.
There's nobody in there. It's just him. And he's delivering this stuff. And I found myself laughing at the parts where I'm supposed to be laughing. But it feels weird watching it because you don't hear anybody else laughing. It's just you. And you're like, oh man, this is like sort of intimate and like a really cool, really cool idea that I just don't know hit all of the notes for me. It was close. Like, I respect the hell out of him for trying because this is such a unique thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself really enjoying it. And also there's some interstitial stuff where he is talking to his girlfriend who is played by an actress. I believe her name is Suki Waterhouse. And she is on camera at points. So she is straight on to the camera as if she was looking into like a phone and they are like, you know, going back and forth on FaceTime or whatever it might be. It plays with images. It plays with lighting. It plays with, she is on a phone line, it sounds like, at points. It's super weird, and it's super out there for a comedy special in 2018. And I wanted to go read up on it because I wasn't sure how it was. It was probably going to be pretty polarizing. And it was to a lot of people, where if you were my age, you thought, like, this is a really cool idea, and I want to see more of this. But then there were also people who were maybe 15, 20 years older going, like, I think this was a comedy special. I don't know what it was going for. I didn't find it funny. Ha ha. You know,
sure.
Like, it was one of those things where somebody took a huge swing and it was either going to fail spectacularly or it was going to do something where you're like, okay, I can see this being something that going forward can be done. And for me, I fell on the side of like, I really liked what they were going for. I just felt like Drew Michaels' content that he was delivering for the jokes was missing a couple of things here and there. And I'm not by any means not a comedy writer or anything
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own content and their own things that they mind to be funny. But there were just times where I was hoping for a little bit more of a certain joke here or a certain punchline here or whatever it might be. And that's just me doing the analytical mindset of like, well, I maybe would have tried this or that. But again, this guy's writing for SNL. I can't tell him how to live because he's obviously doing better than me. But it's just, it was so interesting and so crazy that it stuck with me. And even though it wasn't, again, might not have been the funniest thing I've ever watched, I respected it because it was so different and so unique. And I really couldn't stop thinking about it for a couple days because I was like, man, this is a really, like, this guy went to a professional soundstage in California with another guy, and it's just him delivering the jokes with probably two or three other, like, crew members in there as they're, you know, recording the thing. And he's got to know that stuff's funny or it's just going to die on the vine. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's fascinating for me to think about as somebody who loves comedy. And it was flawed for sure, but I'd like to see more of that going forward. And it was really, really cool. And I recommend it if you like comedy, because it's going to be hard for anybody else to sort of like that thing, I think. I would not recommend it to you, Albie, just because I know you're not a comedy guy. But if somebody who, like me, loves watching stand-up, will watch endless amounts of stand-up, I recommend you go give it a shot. You're going to fall on one of two extremes. You're going to love it. You're going to hate it. But I think it really sets the bar for something cool going forward, like in the stand-up scene. And I think Jerrod Carmichael said that in a couple of interviews where he was like, I don't know, man. It just feels like stand-up's kind of, you can do you can keep doing it the way it is, or you can try to do something that, you know, and fail at it. But I want to try some different things with it. And I respect the hell out of that. I think that's really cool. And it's not going to be for everyone, but I'm glad I watched it. It was really, it was a fun sort of like, all right, yeah, the creativity is here. And I really, really, I respect it so much for trying, even though it may not have gotten to where I wanted it to get to. It feels incredibly intimate because it's just one dude pacing around on a soundstage with different camera shots that are either super tight on his face or an extreme wide shot where he is, you know, walking around delivering the setup to a joke. And it's one of those, it feels like sort of a like you're watching somebody's innermost thoughts almost, and it feels sort of perverse at times where you're just sort of watching this person give these deep, intimate and funny thoughts where you're just like, man, there's nobody here to hear. I'm the the audience is literally you. Like, there is no other audience other than you specifically, the person watching it. And it's up to you to decide, like, is this funny or is this, you know, did he do this? I go back to, like, you have to be super supremely confident in your abilities to make somebody laugh if you're going to shoot this thing, because there is nobody to tell you that this is going to be funny. At least with a stand-up comedy special with an audience, you know, because they will be laughing, they will be heckling, they will be booing, whatever it might be. You have to have refined comedic skills in order to do something like this, and I can't hammer that home enough, because he did a really good job. And it was one of those things where it could have been a train wreck if you don't have the material prepared, and it's just a bunch of rambling thoughts that don't have any cohesive sort of undertone to them, you know?
I guess the thing is, like, do you think this is going to become the slam poetry of comedy now? Like, doing this kind of different thing? Do you feel like it kind of tries to be more intellectual with comedy in some way? To try to be some kind of, like, very different, very emotional kind of linkage thing with it? Or do you feel like, could you see other comedians trying to copy this same kind of thing in the future?
That is actually a very good question. Yeah, I don't want to get on a whole tangent about comedy here, but we're at a point right now, I think in 2018, where the very open and honest and brutal comedy coming straight from the heart of, like, I am messed up as a person, and, you know, I am depressed, or, like, anything talking about your mental health or anything talking about relationship. It feels like in 2018, those are the things that a lot of people are hitting on. And that feels the most fresh, or it feels the most relatable. Like, we all go through these things. So comedy is about being relatable to your audience.
Sure.
Because if it's not relatable, people aren't going to laugh. And I feel like the slam poetry thing is an interesting way to phrase it, I think. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it does certainly feel like somebody is going into a coffee shop and sort of giving you their innermost thoughts on themselves, or being completely introspective or reflective, or just mining the inner depths of their soul to try and figure out who they are as a person. It does sort of feel that way. Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, it does sort of feel like that. It is definitely a type of comedy that can be done with certain comedians. I don't think everybody should be doing it, because you're not going
to... Sure. I don't think a Dave Chappelle could probably pull this off. Well, maybe. Dave is very good at that kind of rambling.
I don't know. That's weird. It just depends on who you are. Like, I know a couple of comedians, like Mike Birbiglia, could probably do something like this, because he is a guy that goes really deep into the self-introspective sort of telling long mm-hmm. stories and hitting you with a punchline that you didn't expect. But I'm not gonna see a Louis C.K. do something like this. I'm not going to see a Bill Burr.
Kevin Hart, people like that.
You're not gonna see. It's definitely a specific subset of comedians that could pull this off. Not everybody.
And maybe because it is, like you were saying, so many comedians right now are trying for this very introspective, very kind of soul-searching thing. Maybe because he's able to do this kind of dark room thing, it makes it feel more emotionally connective. Like,
it does.
Maybe he's trying to be, you know, he's trying to reach you in a way that maybe your typical, you know, when you're standing on stage in front of a big crowd, you can't really emotionally connect with a person. You're connecting with the crowd, right?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's actually a very good way to state it. It's just that he's going after such a personal touch with it that you're not going to get this with a crowd. And I feel like if you did do it with a crowd, it wouldn't have the same resonance that it did, because he's doing, there's even some nice audio manipulation in here. There's some good subtleties that happen with editing in this that I really enjoy as somebody who looks at audio and video a lot.
Where
he talks about not having a great hearing, and the audio dips out when he starts talking about this. You can hear it sort of fade out and go to a point where you can barely hear it, which I thought was a really cool little touch to him talking about the joke.
I'm trying to think about, like, why that is, like, what made me that way. I think the biggest reason is I have a hearing loss that I've had since I was really young. When I was 3 years old, I failed the hearing test, and my doctor was like, you need hearing aids. And I said, no. And he said, oh, okay. You just, like, let me do it? I'm three. Why am I making this choice? Someone make it for me.
Because he's talking about hearing, and then it goes like, well, I'm not a good, I can't hear very well, and then it just kind of fades. It just keeps going, and it fades down. And you're like, wait, what's happening right now? And then you're like, oh, you have to pay attention to these things, because if you're just watching it, you know, half-assedly, you're going to be like, why did the audio just turn? What is happening? So this, it kind of demands your attention because it's so personal. And, like, you have to be paying attention to some of this stuff. Otherwise, you're just, you know, it won't have the same resonance, I don't think. You need to just watch it, and it's a guy doing his best, you know, hour of material, and he nails it for the most part. But, again, I feel like there was some stuff there where I wanted a little – where it didn't peak as high as I would have liked it to. And – but for I believe this is his first stand-up special. Like, it was great. Like, it was really well done. It was different, and I really liked it. It stuck with me.
Do you, final question before we move on? Would David Lynch like this thing? That's my question to you.
I think it falls within a Lynchian feel. Yes.
Okay.
It's a weird. Great. I cannot stress to you how weird this is for a stand-up, quote-unquote stand-up comedy special. It is. It does feel like something that a fever dream that David Lynch would have dreamt up in sort of like an alternate universe in a show somewhere, mm-hmm. where he's got a character who is kind of funny, and then like this is playing on a TV or something in that scene. Like, it just feels so weird, okay. and so outlandish. Okay. But it's,
I might watch this then. That sounds great.
It's really, okay. it's something else. Again, I don't know that it's not. It's probably not even my favorite stand-up of the year. But it is, whenever something tries to do something different or be unconventional, I'm there for it. Because I like seeing people take big swings at things. And if you fail, you fail. And if it's good, that's even better. And I really, it stuck with me. And that's, when something sticks with me, I think that's the biggest compliment that I can give it. Albie?
Yeah.
Have you seen anything else good lately?
Oh, we're going to, okay. Yes, I have. Speaking of taking big swings, and in this case, hitting pretty dang well on it, I'm going to talk to you about Lodge 49. This is a show by AMC. It stars the titular actor from 23 Jump Street, which is he's the dumb football playing jock friend from that there movie. Lodge 49 is about a man Stud Sheen Dudley, played by Wyatt Russell.
Okay.
Who has recently lost his father.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of an ex-surfer. He went down to, I think it was Ecuador or Brazil or what, some southern country. Got bit by a snake. Now can't go in the water anymore. He lost his father. He had a bad run of luck. He lost his father. He got bit by a snake. Can't go in the water anymore because of some kind of, the wound won't heal or something like that. Obviously, a nice allusion to his grieving process in and of itself. This is a show kind of about him kind of trying to find his way back after finding Lodge 49, which is a kind of Masonic-like lodge in this kind of very California surfing town, Long Beach, California. I don't know if you've heard of it, a little town in California. And it's this kind of sort of weirdly calm show. I described this to someone else at some point as if it was like a paranormal show meets The Dude. It's that kind of, it's a paranormal show meets The Dude. If you get what I'm saying, the dude.
Yeah, the big Lebowski. Yes, yes.
A slightly paranormal Big Lebowski. Could you feel me on that? Maybe that's a better way to put it.
That sounds kind of crazy, but considering I like the Big Lebowski, yeah, I would be on board with that.
So yeah, it's not overtly paranormal at times. It's very in the background. It's very sort of like weirdly mystical. The show itself is based on a book by Thomas
Pinochet.
Yes, I wasn't the crying sure. of Lot 49. It's very much about, like, this whole show is kind of about, you know, Dud, the main character, his sister, kind of dealing with what has happened to them, their kind of bad run of luck, and kind of going through a bunch of experiences. Dud is obviously joining this fraternity, but his sister is is kind of sort of struggling with Dud, who does not have a job, kind of putting all of his faith into this lodge thing while she's kind of struggling with a lot of the things she has to deal with, crippling debt, issues with her job, issues with, you know, kind of sense of unfulfillment for her. It's a very interesting show in that it provides a kind of a cool calmness to it. Nothing, it's a kind of a slow show. I think that's the biggest knock you can have about it. The first couple episodes are very slow. They don't really give you a hint to what's going on until a little bit later, kind of about halfway through the show. It's the episode's about 40 minutes to like 50 minutes. I think it's on episode 5 right now. There are, I believe, 10 episodes in the whole thing. I've watched episode 5, and it started to get very good. It's very paranormal. It plays very much with those kind of, you know, like now everything's, what's the true lodge? And like, you know, the true kind of spiritual undertones of this fraternal order. And kind of about these people's lives. You know, I think one of the best characters in this show is played by Brent Jennings. He is a pipe man. He runs a pipe distribution company or like works for one. I don't really know the specifics. He's Ernie Fontaine. He kind of becomes this surrogate father figure for the main character Dud. Sort of has his own kind of journey throughout the show, and kind of goes through this stuff. But one of the best lines, and I think the thing that kind of set the tone for me, is it's this battle in the show between, you have these kind of paranormal things, but the line is, the lodge isn't about those, you know, those things. He's referencing a specific event that has happened that I don't really want to spoil. It's not about, you know, the teachings. It's about the people in the room, right? It's about the various members of the lodge, about, you know, kind of coming together and holding each other up through thick and thin in this kind of very, you know, beautiful fraternal way. That I think is a really powerful message right now of kind of positivity,
mm-hmm.
of coming togetherness, of, you know, working together. You know, the show isn't always happy. It has a lot of sad moments in it, but at the same time, there's a lot of very funny moments, a lot of very light, upbeat moments, and it never takes itself too seriously. I think it's a very fun show. I think it's a show that particularly functions well if you want to binge watch it. You can through AMC. You can subscribe to the show and get all the episodes right now. I have not done that. I'm watching along on TV. I think it works very well as a binge kind of show, like a very, you know, you put it on a Saturday and just kind of chill back and watch this thing. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and by the end of the season, I really hope it kind of continues those themes, and I think it will. I think it's a very good show. I think it has characters that are memorable and I remember. I can look back on moments there. Between characters and really remember those moments and how they got there. So I think it's a very solid show. I really do recommend people give it a try. Might as well have one unabashed seen anything good lately recommendation on this show. It's 100% a show I think more people need to watch.
Yeah, I was looking this up. I wanted to. It says comedy drama as the genre for what I'm looking at here. Is that a fair assessment of this show?
Sort of. I mean, I would say it's closer to comedy, but there are dramatic moments of, you know, I think early on in episode 1, he kind of has a speech about how bad things have been for him lately. Like I got back here, I lost my job, I can't go in the water. You know, he goes into this whole thing and it gets pretty intense. So I think there are certainly drama moments of like, oh, hey, man, like, you know, there's some bad stuff that happens. But at the same time, there are other things where, like, you know, weird, funny things. Like, just, and yeah, it's like, I don't know. just lots of fun things like that that I think are really good for this show.
Yeah, it looks weird. I was watching some trailers for it. Also, I do want to correct myself. I said Pinochet. I confused Thomas Pinchon with Chilean General Augusto Pinochet. My bad on that one. I watched some of the trailers on this, and it looked so weird. And like even just the poster I saw of it on like IMDb, it looked like he was underwater and like sitting on a couch. And I was like, what is this? I don't know. What is this show? But it does sound kind of interesting to me. I'm usually willing to give anything a try. I don't discount anything. And it sounds like I do, despite the fact that it is quoted to death, like The Big Lebowski. And if it sort of has that, the main character sort of has that Lebowski-esque feel, but it is set on, you know, a weird paranormal thing, plus sort of down on his luck, but still kind of funny. I could see myself being into that. Definitely.
It's sort of unique in that you don't see a lot of shows about Long Beach that aren't surfing shows. He's an ex-surfer. He doesn't go surfing in the show. It's like Long Beach, but from the land. It's a lot of cool blue colors. I think they chose the color palette for this show very well. It's so different and unique and very calm, and you feel like you could walk into, it feels like that feeling you have when you walk into a coffee shop at 8 a.m. and the air conditioning is on, and you it's cold, you adjust out, and it's kind of hot outside, but now you're just walking in and it's all cool. And that few seconds when that air conditioning first hits you, that's this show. That's the feeling that I get when I watch this show.
It's a good feeling. I can definitely be on board for that.
It's just such a unique idea. It's such a unique setting. Like, even if you don't necessarily dig the idea of this kind of paranormal lodge stuff, I think the setting of being in Long Beach, of being this kind of very emotionally relevant show, is something that, like, I don't think a lot of people can pass up. I think it's something very unique. Do I think it's always perfect? No. I mean, no show is. I think there's issues, but I just feel like the positives of it vastly outweigh the negatives.
Yeah, and it's I think something that we've, you know, of the stuff we talk about, you said you would recommend, and that's yeah, it sounds like it. I might look into that. I don't know if I'll watch the entire thing, but I'll definitely give it a chance for the first couple episodes, sure.
No, yeah. Give it a few episodes. Yeah. I think it's just a lovely little show. I think AMC has something there. I think it's a show that I hope gets several more seasons, because I think it's going in some interesting directions. So that's my scene. Anything good lately? Number 2. Have a good night, everybody.